Last week we saw that Buddha, or enlightened man, represents a state, an attainment, a mode of being and consciousness for which we have really no equivalent in Western thought, and therefore no word, no term. Because Buddha, as we saw last week, doesn't mean God, doesn't mean the Supreme Being, the creator of the universe. And also, Buddha doesn't mean God incarnate. And Buddha doesn't mean man, man in the ordinary sense. And as we saw last week, we can best think of the Buddha, the enlightened one, in, as it were, evolutionary terms. Now, what does this mean? We know that man is, in ordinary parlance, an animal. That's part of his definition. But he's not an ordinary animal. He's a special kind of animal, a more developed animal, what we usually call, what we usually describe as, a rational animal. It's his rationality that sets him apart from other animals. And in much the same way, Buddha, the enlightened one, is a man, a human being. But he's a special kind of man, a very special kind of man. He's a more developed man, in fact, an infinitely more developed man. And it's this infinitely more developed man that we call an enlightened man. A Buddha, that is to say, a man who has reached and realized fully the state of spiritual perfection that we call enlightenment. This is the Buddha. And Buddhism, we saw last week, is whatever helps close the gap between the ideal and the real. The ideal man and the real man. The real man and the ideal man. Whatever helps transform the unenlightened man into the enlightened man. Whatever helps us to grow, to evolve, and to develop. Now, having understood this, having cast, as it were, a glance backwards at last week's lecture, there's a question that arises. All right. The real man becomes the ideal man. The unenlightened man is transformed into the enlightened man. In other words, a tremendous change takes place. A tremendous development. Perhaps the greatest change, the greatest development in human terms that can possibly take place. And it's this development, this kind of development that we call the spiritual life, or the process of what is sometimes called the higher evolution. But when this change takes place, when this development takes place, what is it that changes? In what does this development consist? Obviously, it's not the physical body that changes, because physically, the enlightened man and the unenlightened man look very much alike. The enlightened man doesn't grow an extra arm or an extra leg. He doesn't even develop a third eye. Not physically, anyway. He doesn't even lose his head, physically or metaphorically. The change that takes place is a purely mental one. Using the word mental in the widest sense, it is consciousness that develops. And this is the great difference, we may say, between the higher evolution on the one hand and the lower evolution on the other. What we call the lower evolution corresponds to the whole process of development from amoeba up to man, i.e. up to ordinary man or unenlightened man. And this is a predominantly biological process, a process that becomes psychological only towards the end. And the higher evolution corresponds to the whole process, the whole course of development from unenlightened man up to enlightened man, and this is a purely psychological and spiritual process. So it's a process also which keeps in touch with the physical body, especially during one's lifetime, but eventually the process may become entirely dissociated from the physical body and from physical life. Now Buddhism, traditional Buddhism, speaks in terms of four grades or four levels of consciousness, each one higher than the one preceding. First of all, there's what is termed consciousness associated with the world or plane. The word is dhatu, which means both. The world or plane of sensuous experience. Secondly, consciousness associated with the world or plane of mental and spiritual form. If you like, the world or plane of archetypes. And then there's consciousness associated with the formless world. And finally, consciousness associated with the transcendental path, that is to say, the path leading directly to nirvana or enlightenment or Buddhahood, as well as nirvana, enlightenment, Buddhahood itself. Now, there's much that could be said on these four levels or grades of consciousness, but we've no time this evening. I enumerate them simply to give us some idea of the different levels of consciousness. There's another classification which we sometimes use, and this one you may perhaps find more helpful. Here too, there are four stages or four levels of consciousness, but they don't correspond very closely or exactly to the four that I enumerated a moment ago. Here, first of all, comes what we call sense consciousness, that is to say, consciousness associated with objects experienced through the physical senses. This is sometimes called simple consciousness, also animal consciousness. It's the consciousness that we share with members of the animal kingdom. Secondly, the self-consciousness, not self-consciousness in the more colloquial sense of the term, but self-consciousness in the sense of awareness, of being aware, knowing that one knows, sometimes called reflective consciousness, because here, consciousness, as it were, bends back upon itself and, as it were, touches itself, knows itself, experiences itself, or is aware of itself, awareness of being aware. We may say, perhaps, that this kind of consciousness, self-consciousness or reflective consciousness, is human consciousness in the full sense of the term. Thirdly, there's what we call transcendental consciousness. This means consciousness of, even contact with, direct personal contact with, reality, ultimate reality, experienced as an object out there. And finally, there's absolute consciousness, in which the subject-object relation is entirely dissolved, and in which there is, as it were, a full realization of ultimate reality as transcending altogether the subject-object duality. Now, in both these classifications, the more traditional as well as the less traditional, the first consciousness enumerated is that of the ordinary, unenlightened man, the man who is not even trying to develop spiritually. And the fourth consciousness in both cases is that of the enlightened man. So that we can now begin to see in what spiritual life essentially consists, what the higher evolution essentially consists in. We may say that it consists in a progression, a continual progression from lower to higher and ever higher states of being and consciousness, from the world of sensuous experience to the world of mental and spiritual form, from the world of mental and spiritual form to the formless world, and from the formless world to nirvana or enlightenment, or from sense consciousness to self-consciousness, self-consciousness to transcendental consciousness, transcendental consciousness to absolute consciousness. And now we can begin to see what meditation really is. And we shall see it all the more clearly for having gone a little into fundamentals first. In fact, there's still one more point to be made, one more distinction. Spiritual life, higher evolution, we say, consists in the development of consciousness. And Buddhism, the teaching of the Buddha, the Dharma, is whatever helps in that development of consciousness from lower to higher. So this we've already understood. But there are two ways, two different ways in which consciousness can be developed, or at least two different methods of approach. And we can call these the subjective and the objective, or if you like, the direct and the indirect. So now, at last, we're in a position to see what meditation really is. Meditation is the subjective or direct way of raising the level of consciousness. In other words, in meditation, we raise the level of consciousness by working directly on the mind itself. We'll see what this means shortly, this working directly on the mind itself.